trial begins today in Birmingham, Alabama, in a murder case that's nearly 40 years old. A former member of the Ku Klux Klan is charged in the 1963 bombing of Birmingham's 16th Street Baptist Church, one of the most notorious crimes of the civil rights era. The state convicted another Klan member, Robert Chambliss, in 1977, but three other suspects never were brought to trial. Federal prosecutors are trying to win convictions against two who are still living. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports.
To church trustee Carolyn McKinstry, it was no accident that the Ku Klux Klan targeted 16th Street Baptist Church.
It was the largest black church in Birmingham, but because of its central location, it was used for a lot of other things. All kinds of meetings, national, local, and so forth.
The Byzantine-style structure with two domed towers and a roomy basement auditorium served as the hub for the mass meetings of the civil rights movement, drawing leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. Marchers would assemble at the church and then cross the street to demonstrate at Kelly Ingram Park, the site of violent clashes between Birmingham police and civil rights activists. On September 15, 1963, violence erupted during Sunday morning services at the church. McKinstry, who was 14 years old at the time, was secretary of her Sunday school class. She was taking attendance records into the sanctuary when the bomb went off.
I was right about in here, and when I got right here, I heard something that sounded at first a little like thunder, and then just this terrific noise, and the windows came crashing in. And then a lot of screaming, just a lot of screaming, and I heard someone say, "Hit the floor." And I remember being on the floor, just right here in this area, and it was real quiet like it is now.
The bomber had hidden under a set of cinder block steps on the side of the church, tunneled under the basement, and placed a bundle of dynamite under what turned out to be the girls' restroom. The blast killed four girls, Cynthia Wesley, Carol Robertson, and Addie Mae Collins, all 14, and 11-year-old Denise McNair. More than 20 others were injured, including Addie Mae's sister, Sarah, who lost an eye in the attack. Sarah Collins Rudolph remembers that day well.
Me and my sister Janie, Addie, and me, we walked to church that morning. We had a good time. We walked, we was playing football, had Addie preach throwing it.
They were late for Sunday school, so Sarah and Addie Mae decided to skip it and wait in the restroom until it was time for church. When Sunday school let out, their classmates, Carol, Denise, and Cynthia, stopped in. The last thing Sarah recalls was Addie helping the younger Denise tie the sash on the back of her dress. Sarah was on the opposite side of the room, washing her hands at the sink.
By the time I turned the water like this, and it said, boom, and I ain't see no more because I was blinding both of my eyes. Both of them. I didn't even see them get killed or nothing. All I knew, I just couldn't see nothing. I called out that morning to Addie, and I called her about 3 times. I called her, but I didn't hear no sound. And then that's when I heard that person outside holler, "Somebody bombed the 16th Street Church."
The brutal attack and the death of four girls rocked the nation and drew international attention to the violent struggle for civil rights in Birmingham. But despite the outrage and an intense FBI investigation, no one was charged in the crime. That was the real horror of it, according to longtime church member Carolyn McKinstry.
These are friends of mine. And we come to Sunday school one day and they're gone. They're dead. They're just blown away. And Birmingham goes on with business as usual.
It was more than a decade before state authorities took action. Then Attorney General Bill Baxley charged Klan leader Robert Dynamite Bob Chambliss with murder.
It was a horrible, horrible premeditated act of blind, pure hatred.
Baxley was able to use the evidence collected by the FBI years before to convict Chambliss in 1977.
We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree, as charged in the indictment, and fix his punishment at life imprisonment in the penitentiary.
Chambliss died in jail, never publicly admitting to the bombing, and Baxley left office before he could pursue charges against Chambliss's suspected accomplices. One of them has since died, and last year an Alabama grand jury indicted two others on murder charges, 62-year-old Thomas Blanton Jr. and 71-year-old Bobby Frank Cherry. Baxley says prosecutors have their work cut out trying to prove a case more than 37 years after the crime.
Well, of course, you have people that would be witnesses that have died or gotten in bad health or their memories have gone, that's probably the number one hurdle. Number two, the defendants themselves, when they're sitting there at the table looking like old men, like somebody's grandfather or uncle, they don't look like they're capable of doing these terrible things that they did.
This time, the U.S. attorney, working with local and state authorities, will present the case. Federal officials say they have some new witnesses linking the former Klansman to the bombing, including relatives who recall the suspects admitting to the crime. The FBI reopened the bombing case about 7 years ago at the urging of black community leaders. Retired FBI agent in charge Rob Langford says it's important for the community to see that the government is doing something now.
See, the Bureau couldn't give much information to the Birmingham police then because they were really infiltrated by the Klan. So looking back through the files, you could see where we just really basically sat on it because didn't give it to the Birmingham police, didn't give it to the state police.
Ever since the bombing, the probe centered on Chambliss and his Klan buddies, including Blanton and Cherry. And all along, they've denied involvement. Defense attorneys say it's too late for the two men to get a fair trial because so much time has passed. But that hasn't been a problem in neighboring Mississippi, where officials have successfully prosecuted old Klansmen for civil rights-era murders. Black leaders in Birmingham are encouraged by those convictions. The Reverend Abraham Woods is president of the Birmingham Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He believes the trial is necessary for the state to move past its racist image.
Bring these bombers to justice, and if they are convicted, it will help clear the air. If they are not convicted, then the blot on Alabama and Birmingham is going to be greater.
The idea that somehow Birmingham's reputation hangs on the outcome of this trial is troubling to Cherry's lawyer, Mickey Johnson.
I've never heard anyone say, well, what is the acquittal of someone going to do? Is that going to bring closure? And the answer to that, in most people's definition, is no, it won't bring closure unless they're convicted. Now, that is the kind of dangerous thinking that scares me.
Bombing survivor Sarah Collins Rudolph isn't looking for closure. It's too late for justice now, Rudolph says, as she touches the scars on her face where doctors removed 23 pieces of glass from the bombing.
It'll never bring closure to me. See, they messed me up. I got to live with it for the rest of my life, for them disfiguring my face.
Rudolph, now a housekeeper, says she will testify in the case. Last week, a judge separated the two suspects' trials. Jury selection for one, Thomas Blanton, gets underway today. The trial of the other defendant, Bobby Frank Cherry, was postponed for medical reasons. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Birmingham.